Today on the Rising Coaches Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Rising Coaches Podcast. I'm your host, Brian Bender, and today's episode is brought to you in part by Boost Analytics. Boost is one-of-a-kind technology company that provides NBA caliber analytics and video analysis to a select number of men's and women's Division I basketball programs. Boost uses artificial intelligence and natural language technologies to make analytics more user-friendly and translate complex data into easy-to-read coaching insights. The Boost platform was built by data scientists and basketball experts with decades of experience at both the collegiate and NBA levels. To learn more about Boost and how your team can gain a competitive edge, head over to their website at www.boostsport.ai and join the fastest growing team in college basketball analytics. Also, if you're not already a member and are interested in joining the largest coaching tree in basketball, visit risingcoaches.com to sign up today. You'll build genuine relationships with other coaches, have access to amazing content that will allow you to develop your craft, expand your network, and see job opportunities on our member site that won't get posted anywhere else. For more information, visit risingcoaches.com. All right, today's special guest, Coach Steve DeMayo from Northwest Florida State College. For the second time, he's the head coach there. Coach, how you doing today?
Doing great. Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure being with Rising Coaches. I heard Kitty Young last week on one of the podcasts, and you shot me a message a few days later. And I was like, damn, this would be great to be on here
with you. That's guys. Awesome. She's one of the best and, you know, a rising star in our industry, more so on the search firm side, but does a lot of things and helps our organization. There's a lot of people out there that have been, you know, kind of family for us as we continue to grow and develop as an organization, and definitely one of the best in Kitty Young, and she's awesome. So tell us a little bit about your background, your story. Tell us, you know, how you got to get this job for the second time through and walk in the crazy profession you've been a part of.
Well, I've been doing this for 3 decades now, and it's been a lot of fun. I started out as a junior college coach at Queensborough Community College after working on Wall Street for a year, and realized I didn't want to sit in a cubicle my whole life. And I had this wild opportunity to make $800 a year to give up a Wall Street salary. My mom and dad wanted to shoot me on that, but took the job, and year after year, I kept moving up in the business. Was a D2 assistant, JUCO head coach for 3 years at Bronx Community College, which was probably one of the most challenging jobs, but one of the jobs that really got my name out there because I was recruiting in New York City, and that's kind of what my reputation was built on. Then I went to Monroe College. I owned it with Tim Wells for 3 years, had a lot of success there, then Providence for 10, and then kept bouncing around. And, you know, I was just with Joe Dooley last year at ECU, and one of the best coaches I've ever been around. I mean, you know, every day was like going to a PhD in basketball, you know, working with him. So I learned a lot that year. And, you know, this job opened up when Greg Heyer got hired at New Mexico State. And one thing led to another. And I was like, you know, something, let me go back and live on a beach.
Nothing wrong with that at all. I moved from warm weather all the way to cornfields in Iowa. So, you know, all good things. But you're going to enjoy your time back on the beach and
no question.
Continue to, you know, you can't say build because it's built, but continue to maintain the great success that you had there prior and will continue to have there.
You know, it's funny people say that, but like every single year coaching junior college is a rebuild because you lose 10 guys, lose 12 guys, you lose 8 guys. And like, you know, it's like being a G League coach. It's like being a Division I head coach now because everyone's losing their roster as well. So it definitely helps to have a good reputation in the business and come off a national championship and won a national championship previously and have an unbelievable administration that's behind us. But we both know if you don't get the right players, it's hard to maintain that winning ways.
Yeah, definitely. And so you talk about, you know, getting the right players. Is there something that you've always done a good job in getting players? And, you know, we mentioned before, like, you're a basketball coach, you're not a recruiter, but at the junior college level, your job, like you said, we've been in the transfer portal our whole career. Yes. So, you know, what have you found to be the most successful in getting guys from 1 year or expediting your culture, or your team, or any of those types of things in 6 to 9 months? Because that's basically all you have them for to get them prepared to play in one season.
You know, Brian, it's funny you say that because, like, I just coming across recruiting all these guys even in the last month at Northwest or 2 years ago at St. John's or, you know, ECU. Like, all these kids want to be promised stuff. They want to be guaranteed stuff. They want to be told, I'm a starter. Now I'm making $400,000 from the NIL money. Like, it's hard to operate that way and have a successful team year in, year out if you're guaranteeing guys, because you're going to guarantee 12 guys that, and then you're not going to have a good team. So I try to make promises, but short of starting, you know, obviously I know what a good player is, as we both do, but you try to make sure you're talking to the right guys, because there's some guys who right off the bat, you know, that's the guys, even though he's a good player, might not fit your team and fit the way you want to play and fit your locker room. So, you know, I'm fortunate I can go to the next guy, and sometimes we do that quickly.
Yeah, what are some of the questions that you'd like to ask to kind of help you filter through these, other than, you know, having good relationships with people and understanding human beings? That's an art form in itself, and you've done a very good job of that. But, you know, how do you find guys and ask the right questions to help you avoid problems before you get them there?
So my big thing is, hey, tell me about your weakness. And, you know, if you hit the guy with that with one of the first couple questions, most coaches won't want to do that because they get scared guys off. But if I scare a guy off, then God bless them, there'll be another school to go to. So, like, for instance, last night I just asked a player that, and he goes, "Coach, you know, I got to do a better job with my ball handling. Coach, I got to do a better job with my shot selection." I said, why do you think you did that? And he broke it down even further. And, like, you know, someone's like, this guy's humble. This guy really wants to get better. This guy was on a bad team last year, but he had to take shots for them to have any success. So I'm kind of inquisitive with that type of stuff. And I think it really, really helps me form an opinion of the guy if I can coach him and if we can mesh well together.
Yeah, that's great. I've done similar in some of the stuff that I've done. I do a lot of it culturally. So I tell them what my core values are and I ask them what the three words mean to them. And you can find a lot about if a kid, you know, competently can fit you or be able to, know kind of what you're about and understand what you're saying. Because sometimes, like, you don't always know all those factors until you actually get them in a room with you, and by then sometimes it's too late. So, you know, that's another really good question to ask, and more so on the basketball side, which I think is a good one, and I may steal that from you.
Yeah. So this is what this business is all about: stealing plays, stealing philosophies and core values and all that stuff. And it's interesting because, you know, now you got a staff, and all of a sudden you tell yourself, "I really like this guy because he answered the questions right there." Like, well, I just watched all of his synergy clips and I don't think he's good enough for us. So now I'm like, oh my God. So now I got to watch the synergy stuff. And like, but in reality, sometimes there's some guys that may not appear to be quite good enough, but you just feel that connection with them. And I think that's our job, is to help people become better human beings. And I think you need some different types of those guys on your team. Everyone can't be a 5-star player. Some guys can be a 2.5-star player who, with his attitude, can be a 3, 4, 5-star player eventually.
Yeah, that's awesome. You mentioned you started on Wall Street. Tell me a story about Wall Street that is translated to college basketball.
You know, I was only there about a year, so I was working for AIG insurance company as an underwriter with them. And so, I mean, there really, really wasn't much, but there was a lot of schmoozing going on. You know, a lot of networking and a lot of late night dinners. And there's kind of some parallels there with building relationships. The best schmoozers were the guys that rose up the top as quickly as possible. I've still got a couple of friends who were in the business, and those guys did a great job of schmoozing. Now they're the top guys in the business. So, you know, I think that's probably the one thing that would translate a little bit.
Yeah.
It's all about relationships. It's really about relationships, everything you do.
Yeah, definitely. So when I was at Southwest, I know you're close to him, but Tim Ryan started in sales as well and did some business stuff. And he's the one guy that I like. This year, he got me on a couple of players, and I asked him, now that I'm not in the league, I said, "How'd you do it? Like, how'd you get these two guys?" And it was funny because he's like, "Everything's about sales." He's like, "What I learned selling, I utilize that in a business related aspect that's translated to recruiting." And it's something that I've never done, so it's unique to hear a different side of it where your background kind of helps you in this business and continue to grow and do those types of things.
He's another guy. He's from Queens too. We're both from Queens, so he's got that schmooze in him, I'm sure too.
And there you go.
So yeah, there you go.
There you go. All good things. So you were a head coach, and then you went to be an assistant. What were some of the things that you learned being a head coach that we didn't realize that when we became assistants that you became a better assistant? Like, what are some things that you learned as being a head coach that translated to make you a better assistant coach when that happened?
You know, I've done it a couple of times in my career. I've done it three times now when I went from Monroe College to Iona. And then I went from Newberry to Hofstra. Then I went from, yeah, I went from Northwest to St. John's. And the one thing I learned, one thing I really learned is that, you know, head coaches have only a certain amount of time, and you don't have unlimited time in front of them. So whenever you're bringing them something, you got to make sure it's not just an opinion, but it's a fact, and you've done a really, really good job researching what you've done. If it's a player, if it's a play you want to give them, does the play actually work for your team with the right players and spots? I mean, just because you see someone on TV, a guy's like, hey, let's run this, but we don't have a guy that catch a lob, you know? So we don't got a guy that's a knockdown shooter from wherever. Like, you know, obviously, so you have to really, really research things before you open your mouth. And trust me, I made a lot of mistakes when I was with Tim Welsh back at Iona. It was Jeff Ruland, me, Craig Holcomb, and Tim Welsh. And then I got an earful a couple of times on some things. I was a young assistant first time, but like we had an unbelievable dynamic there. So it was pretty cool for me to learn that on the job there. Yeah. But after that, for the most part, I really, really learned, hey, you got to work at everything you talk about. You can't just say something because you feel it, you know?
Right. I learned that the hard way too. I worked for another New York guy, Jim Fox. And when I was at App State, he would always bring up like, you know, something, and he'd like continue to drill you. And after like three or four things, like you kind of ran out of ammo, and he'd say, you're just from the hip now. You're just, you know, you're just guessing. Like, I always try to get you to crack and break and be able to prove your point, or it wasn't good enough. How about on the flip side? How about something that you learned, you know, in the last 2 years as an assistant that will help you be even better head coach now?
Yeah,
at Northwest.
And I always thought I did a pretty good job of preparing for scouting and different things, and, you know, just working with Joe Dooley this past season. I mean, there's no one that works harder than that guy. There's no one that's more detail oriented than that guy. Obviously, he was at Kansas and was a huge part of a lot of that success, and then he was really successful at Florida Gulf Coast. And, you know, obviously EC is a really, really hard job, but he had them right at the doorstep many, many times to take that next step. Really, probably more of the scouting things and some specific actions to get guys quick buckets. You know, obviously I worked at St. John's, and the system there was up-tempo. And I've always been an up-tempo guy, pressing guy. You know, there's a few drills I'm going to take from those guys that they did that I think are, you know, it's like a 3-on-2, 2-on-1 drill that's kind of got an extra component to it on the front side of it. It'd be hard to show here, but if we record, it'd be great. But like, yeah, just because, you know, you're always trying to steal from people and learn from people. But more of the scouting part of it, I think, you know, there's going to be some things I'm going to do that might disturb some of the team's offensive flows, or, you know, or run some offensive sets to really get guys in foul trouble quickly.
Interesting. Yeah. I won't forget. So my first loss as a head coach is actually to you. So I think we were 7-0 or 8-0 when we played you the first time. And I won't forget, we played with you guys for about 16 minutes, and I was like feeling pretty good about it. And then you guys went on like an 11-0 run right before half. And I looked at my assistants and I was like, what in the world just hit us? And it was like a press and it was like a defensive steal. And all of a sudden you guys hit like three threes in a row. And I was like, I didn't even know what to do. I'm like double digits at half after we just played probably the best half we played all season.
No question. And you were good friends with Adam Sweeney, and I think yeah, I knew you guys were coming in hot, and you guys were talking some smack. So, yeah. but our guys were always confident anyway. But you guys played really well. But that's what happens when you're on the road in junior college. You know, the other team hits you with a press, and 1, 2, 3 turnovers become, you know, a 15-point lead pretty quickly. And so I'm definitely gonna steal some things about the press that I learned over at St. John's and stuff like that. So. You know, I mean, I've always been, as they call, a continuous learner. I've always been big on learning, and I think every year in my career, every summer, I kind of specialize in trying to get better at something. Back in, I think back in 2004 or 2005, I was assistant at Providence, and I had an interview for a Division I job, and the AD said to me, you know, how do I know you're going to be a good head coach? You've never been. I've been like, well, I've been a head coach before, but it kind of stung me in the back a little bit, made me feel bad. So I started working every year, meeting with people, specific people on specific things to learn. If it's end of game situations, if it's becoming a better defensive coach, becoming a better, offensive coach, whatever it happens to be. So every year I work really, really hard at developing my craft. And, you know, my assistants who are friends with you will tell you that we've been on the board in my office for hours. I mean, and I'll get up there and X and O with them as well, because I think it's important for assistants to feel comfortable being able to get on the board and design plays and talk you through what you got to do, because one day they're going to have the opportunity to be a head coach. And, you know, I've been fortunate. I have a lot of guys who are head coaches now, and they're doing very, very well.
Yeah, I think that's very important. You know, you mentioned the word leadership. So continue to develop leaders rather than quote unquote followers in your business as a leader and as a head coach. And one thing that Thomas Gray, who was my the head coach my first year at Southwest Mississippi, was he challenged me to think like a head coach every day.
Mm-hmm,
and it prepared me. Like you said, I had like exponential growth. I probably learned 3 or 4x times, did every single scout, was on the floor, got my reps. You know, he literally said the defense is yours, and he would just drill me to death to have answers for everything. Sure. And it really, really helped me develop as an assistant coach. And then it prepared me to be a good head coach. And I think that, like you said, that's part of coach is, can you develop coaches to help them not only think on their own, but become good head coaches as well.
And that's probably the most exciting part of my job, really, just watching guys grow that have been with me as assistant coaches. And we're doing it together. It's not like I don't use the I word very often. It's really more we. And, you know, it's fun watching guys like Rosby at Idaho State, and, you know, Adam's done well for himself. And, you know, Jake's done great for himself at Dodge City. Now he's with Milwaukee, and Hank Plone, who got work with the Providence, and Grant McMillan. Like, we've got a ton of guys out there, you know, Rory Kuhn's at Gulf Coast. Like, and it's fun to watch them and see how they do things. And, you know, and they give me ideas too when I'm watching their teams play a lot too. So it's a continuing learning process.
Yeah, so when you talk about your learning and your growth, and you've kind of dedicated your time towards different things, how would you describe your identity now, and how has it kind of shifted? Because, like, how you did things 10 years ago is not the same. How the game is not the same. How kids are not the same, and everything's changing. So how have you continued to, you know, survive in a business for 30-plus years? Because there's so many guys, and even, you know, with hirings and firings, like, you've continued to stay, you know, relevant. You've continued to stay growing in the profession and not get bitter or sour or stuck in your ways. So what would kind of be your identity now, and how has that shifted?
Well, I've always believed in treating people the way you want to be treated. So I know a lot of coaches are out there, you know, yelling and hollering and stuff. And I'm not saying I didn't yell and kick the ball in the stands a couple times in my career. But, you know, I've always liked to treat people with class, and especially – you know, even though you're challenging guys and you're getting after them a little bit, I don't think you have to downgrade somebody to get your point across. That's not what basketball is about. That's not what building people's self-esteem is about. I mean, I know a lot of guys, that's the way they do it. That's just never been my deal. So even now more than ever, I think it's more prevalent because no one wants to be crushed anymore, you know? And obviously, you know, we've seen a lot of coaches getting in trouble for doing those type of things on film, and, you know, all that stuff, throwing ball, all that stuff, like, just met the crazy, crazy stuff. So, you know, I've always coached with a positive perspective on, I see what guys can do more than what guys can't do. You know, if you're going to be on our team, there's a reason you're on our team. You could dribble, pass, or shoot. You could, you know, you could defend. What it is, I'm not going to beat you up because you can't dribble with your left hand. We're going to try to make you improve that every day after practice or before practice. So I think when guys see that you're trying to help them improve, and you're treating them like human beings, they're going to be more apt to giving you everything they got. You know, that's just been my deal. And obviously, like, a lot of people say, you're like an NBA coach, like, because of my positive demeanor on the sideline for the most part and how I treat people. So, you know, I take that as a compliment. I don't know if that's correct, but, you know, I think I've grown a lot over the years on just learning how to continually make sure that I control my emotions and keep teaching versus, you know, getting after people. It's something you have to be aware of every day as a coach.
Yeah, because you can't change it. You always have to be modeling the way, and I think that's extremely important in what you've done. How have you, with that, so I hate to use the word unique or uncommon, but like you said, that's not very, quote-unquote, normal, especially in college basketball, especially for guys that, you know, are – you know, don't take this the wrong way, but getting older. Okay. Sure, so sure. How do, when kids have been treated a certain way for a long time and it's kind of shifted, how do you continue to hold them accountable in that way when that may be perceived as nice or, you know, soft or more loving type leadership, coaching and tendencies?
Sure. I mean, you don't gotta MF someone to hold them accountable. I mean, hey man, listen, you know, if you don't make the 22 in 22 seconds, we're going to do it again. Versus, you know, yelling at the guy and stamping your feet and, you know, throwing your arms up and you're like, hey, we'll stay here all day until we get to, until we make the time. Like, that's it. You know, we're holding you accountable. Like, that's, you know, you just speak to him and you talk to him and you let him know there's a line in the sand that's not going to be crossed. So that's kind of what we've done over my last years at Northwest. And, you know, my first year there, I was getting back to being a head coach. I've had a lot of learning that year. It's a little more challenging. But I really think also a big part of being successful is recruiting the right type of guys that understand what being accountable is about. You know, like, you know, if you've got the wrong guy in your program, they're never going to get it. You know, that's the biggest thing. I think we all think we could move mountains, but, you know, we could definitely move some mountains a little bit. We can't move them too far, you know, so make sure you got the right guy that's got the right support system around them as well, that wants to be coached and wants to become great.
Definitely. Now, with your experiences, you know, bouncing around different Division I's and junior college mostly, what would you suggest to younger guys trying to get into the profession? Because I've been talking to a couple guys in the hiring process now, and some are like, yeah, I'm looking for an operations job, or I'm looking to, you know, stay at Division I. How can you give us a little plug on JUCO for a minute of like, hey, the experiences that you get at this level can make a difference in your life and your coaching career? Just sure. Give us a little firsthand dose of what that really entails, or what would you tell rising coaches, managers, GAs, video guys, operations people, like, besides you need to coach. Yeah, plug it. Tell them what they need to know.
So listen, so I was coaching for like, I don't know how many years, close to 20 years. I needed a job after I was at Hofstra, and Steve Forbes was a head coach in Northwest Florida in 2013. He calls me and says, hey, why don't you come be my assistant? I'm like, I'm a head coach. I don't know if I could be a JUCO assistant anymore. But he rattled off a list of things of like what you could do to train yourself to be better and put yourself in people's eyes. Like, you know, from scouting to recruiting to, you know, player management to developing rosters to administrative stuff to admissions to whatever it happens to be. And, you know, he actually made me think about it for a little while. And then about 2 weeks later, he goes, hey, do you want to be the head coach? I'm going to Wichita State. You know, so, but like the reality is there's so many ways you can improve yourself as a junior college assistant coach, because it's just never ending. And, you know, in Division I, there's more specialization. You know, you might be the recruiter, you might be the guy that does the workouts. You know, you might be the guy that handles admissions, you might be the guy that's just recruits. And like, but in junior college, you don't do everything. And there's a new skill that's really, really important. I'm looking to hire someone right now for someone who does graphics. Like, we never talked about graphics and social media and you know, helping your following and stuff like that. But that's something that's important to our athletic department. So, you know, with my position I'm hiring for, I have an assistant spot open now. Like, I want to find someone who could do graphics. And I lost a guy when I was with that last time. Now he has his own graphics company. You know, so, I mean, there's so many things that can come out of being a junior college assistant coach. I mean, you know, you'll be one of the best salesmen in the business, you know, if you decide to go work for Stryker Medical Sales. You know, like I said, my guy's now working, he runs his own graphics company, making a fortune. Like, you wear so many hats. You wear so many hats. And I think it's probably the best place to start. Because if you're a GA or you're a, I don't know, say you're an ops guy, you can't be, the ops guys can't be on the floor. He can't really be involved in scouting. He can't be doing workouts. The GAs could be involved in workouts, but they can't really be running them. You know, he can't be doing the scouts. Like, any possible experience that's out there in basketball, you can get at the JC level. And then obviously just building relationships. And I think that helps too, because, you know, you build relationships with these guys and coaches see you working every day. And if you're at a really good junior college coach is going to want to maybe hire you because they see how you do workouts, how you communicate with your players and all that stuff. And, you know, we've probably talked about this many times. It's the best level to get experience at.
Definitely the best, and helps groom you in so many ways. And like you said, you can also learn to make mistakes too, because when you're talking about flipping rosters and doing different things, and you're sometimes dealing with second chance guys or guys that academically are a challenge, they may need you a little bit more in certain categories.
Sure.
Which makes, you know, your ability to teach and to relate even more powerful. What about on the flip side? So junior college guys, you've seen a few of them get Division I assistant jobs this year. What would you say to those guys, and even like, you know, Greg Heyer being a head coach and getting a Division I head coaching job? What would you say, you know, that need is filled or going backwards from it? You know, what would you say like a niche would be the best thing to do in junior college? Because you've seen a lot of these guys, like even the guy that worked for you and Jake, in getting a job and he has players. So tell us a little bit about the other side of it and you making that jump as well.
I mean, I think it's what, and I tell all my assistants this, you know, every time someone walks in the building, it's an opportunity for you to build a relationship. You know, it's an opportunity to become that guy's guy. Like, you know, and I really believe like a lot of guys miss the opportunity because they're either, you know, they don't want to force themselves on people, but every Division I assistant coach that walks in your building's there for a reason, either to recruit one of your guys or recruit one of the guys on the other team. But they need information and you have information. Because you're at all these games, you're watching guys, and the information they care about most is probably who's a good player, you know, and that's where you could build your relationship on. Roy Kuhn did an unbelievable job of that. He was with me for 4 years, and he built relationship after relationship, and he was so well-liked in the business. It's kind of ironic that he went to the women's side, but I mean, he was going to be a Division I men's assistant within a year or two. He stuck it out at a really, really good level, but he decided to go to the women's side. But, you know, I really think that's the way that's your segue into the business. Now, a lot of guys have come from GA spots or being a manager of Division I to junior college. You already have that network in place. Just keep building on it. If you have success working at a junior college, now you're going to look a little sexy to these guys when they want to hire you because you have that winning experience. And I think winning experience helps people get jobs.
Yeah, I agree completely. And, you know, like you said, you have a job that's open right now. And we actually, you know, we don't post it everywhere, but we did post it on the Rising Coaches website. We didn't put your number down. We put Sweeney's number down. So, you know, we won't bombard you with all the phone calls. Tell us about your, you know, so you got like three or four jobs in the last year, technically. What is your phone like when you get these jobs? Because I got this job and I was like overwhelmed mentally, emotionally. Like, yeah. I'm always one, I hate notifications on my phone. So, like, I get back to people as soon as I can, you know, maybe 20 minutes or an hour if I'm busy doing something. Mm-hmm. But like, when I get back to my phone, I have 16 right. notifications. I'm going to answer all 16 then and now. How have you managed your phone literally as you mm-hmm. couple different jobs and multiple occasions?
Yeah. It's not ideal. You know, things happen in this business for one reason or the other. And, you know, so I had to make a couple moves and, you know, it's a challenge. It's really like, you know, because I've got a lot of people I know in the business, and you know, every time you make a move, everyone's like, hey, congratulations. But it's been, like you said, it's been a little bit mentally challenging at times. It's been emotional. You know, I've moved to different parts of the country, which I think is a real positive because you build relationships with new people. But it's a challenge, just, you know, as we were talking earlier about, you know, finding a place to live. Does the internet connection work in your house? Does, you know, all that type of stuff. Like, you know, are your kids gonna be close enough to schools and this and that. Like, there's a million things to look at. You know, luckily I'm a single guy, so I don't have to worry about that. But, you know, there's a lot of factors that go into it. There really are. And now I'm back in Destin, Florida, where the rents have gone up in the area I want to move, probably like 60 to 70% higher than it were when I was there in 2019. So that's the biggest challenge, you know, like finding a place to live and is it the right spot? But, you know, having a job in this business, we're all blessed because there's a lot of people. I speak to 10 people a day who do not have jobs, who have good friends of mine, you know, just, and I want to make sure they're okay because I was there multiple times in my career, you know, and, you know, we all love what we do. We love this business, but when you're out of work and you're trying to get a job, it's really, you know, it's scary at times. Now, some guys say, you'll get the job, relax, but you know, it's until you get the job, it's hard to relax. So now I got a job. I need to get a vacation.
Something. It's right when you get the job, you got the most work to do.
I know, right? And so you don't really have time. You don't have time for vacation. But if you could ever just take a vacation when you're in between jobs, that's the ideal thing to do. But none of us usually feel comfortable enough to do that.
Yeah, that's funny. You should have just kept your place from last time when you left and just rented it out. You'd be a millionaire right now.
Hey, let's not talk about that.
Tell us one thing that you believe in that other people may think is weird. Give us like Just one example of something that you've done or that you think is weird.
Sure. Less is more. Shorter practices help us win games at the end of the year. I've been around too many coaches that want to go forever in practices or watch practice or talk to guys that want to go 3 hours. But 3 hours could be 4 or 5 because, you know, you're in the building before, you're doing film, all that, whatever the rules are. But, like, literally, I believe on and off the floor no more than an hour and a half max. Now, that doesn't mean you can't do, you know, work before, work after with an assistant coach, but I'm talking about the actual practice time. We don't go over an hour and a half ever. If I can't
do
an hour and a half worth of stuff, and then I don't think I'm doing a good job. And my goal is to keep these guys fresh and make the guys love coming to practice tomorrow versus being like, damn, I got to go practice tomorrow.
Yeah, I think that's important. And, you know, being able to adjust that on the fly, I think it's extremely important. And that's one thing. I can't say I struggled with, but teams that I've been a part of in the past have not always peaked at the end. We've peaked at the beginning, middle, you know, a few at the end, but, you know, sure, more so middle and beginning rather than at the end. I think that might be something that could help a lot of people. What lessons in this business have taken you the longest to learn?
You know, probably – as I keep talking about relationships, I think I think the lessons are, you know, you've got to make sure you don't just have relationships with people at your level of coaching. You've got to really, really work and build relationship with the administrative people if you want to move up in this business. And, you know, I think a lot of times I just kept doing my job. I think especially my first 13, 14, 15 years in the business, you know, when I was at Iona in Providence, I just focused on doing my job, getting the best players possible, helping the players become successful. But I think you've got to take, you know, an hour a day, you know, a half hour a day over the week, you know, so that's 3 hours a week ballpark, you know, and you could build relationships with people, you know, follow up with people, make the phone calls. Because if you want to be the next guy in this business, you know, you have to have a great relationship with that electric. Because a lot of times that the associate ADs, your girl coming on the business with, would become AD.
Years back was, there was two people that I interviewed with, maintain relationships with, and they were connected to this job. Wow. And those were the two people that helped me the most. Mm-hmm. And that's a really unique way of stating things. It's like, hey, yeah, continue to, yeah, you got to build your players, your staff.
Sure.
And you need to get players and, you know, sure, have your get out. But there's another side of our business as well that sometimes, you know, neglected or, you know, you never know. And even other coaches at your campus, because yeah, they have the different institutions and same type of thing. And that's a unique point to think about.
And then you're right. You like, yeah, the volleyball coaches, the women's basketball coach, like if you, because those people could eventually help you with opportunities. And, you know, some of your friends with the associate ADs, assistant ADs, wherever you're working at, like they may reach out to you one day when you're somewhere. I mean, I got so many calls when I was back at St. John's, you know, and at ECU the last 3 years from people who were like, they were checking in with me, you know, because who knows, because maybe there was a job that might be opening in that deal. I'm like, but that's just what building relationships is about. I never look at and I think, hey, they're trying to get a job, but like, you know, because I've reached out to them for favors or some ideas on things. But I think you got to constantly stay in touch with people if you want to be that next guy or girl.
Yeah, definitely. What are some questions that I should have asked that I haven't? So, you know, you've been in this thing and you've, you know, we talked a little about rising coaches and trying to help them, you know, get experience maybe at the JUCO level or smaller college level to build their network and get reps. What is something else that you would say to younger people or, you know, something that I should have asked you that I haven't yet?
Yeah, I mean, I think obviously going to practices, going to as many college practices, high school practices as you can, and just, you know, learning from coaches that are, I've done it for a while, because before you know it, there'll be one day someone's going to give you the board and say, hey, you're the head coach, and are you ready? Like, you just never know when the job's going to be yours. So, you know, it's so easy to become a better coach now with video stuff, Google, whatever you want to Google, offense, defense, special situations, last second plays. You got synergy. Like, there's a million ways to do it. But I do like when you're actually watching someone do something in practice and then interacting with them afterwards, because you know, that's another opportunity to grow a relationship.
Yeah, definitely. Very,
Yeah. So, I mean, really, like if you're, most people want to be head coaches in this business for the most part, not everybody, but, and even if you're going to be a lifelong assistant, you still have to be really, really good at the X and O's, because one day that's going to be, coach may ask you for something, you know, to run a play at the end of a game. You have to be prepared for that.
Right. Definitely. If you were to challenge us for the next 24 hours, like you're a busy guy, give us a 24-hour challenge of something that we can take action doing. I mean, we can't necessarily just go see another practice or, you know, go. I mean, you can read or watch a video or something. Give us a 24-hour challenge that we can, you know, take action and make it kind of, you know, tangible in a way.
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, you got the NBA playoff games on it. And like, there's so many opportunities. Every quarter is an end-of-game situation. I would make sure you watch every single end of quarter you can watch, because it's a last-second play. It's a high ball screen. It's a side-out. It's a B.O.B. You know, those guys are the best in the business. And you know, that's four end-of-game situations per game. And obviously, they're running a lot of sets. And, you know, the defense is a little bit different. But you could steal a lot of things from watching NBA games. If it's, you know, positioning, if it's blocking out, if it's rebounding. I mean, there's so many great stories that are coming from this. I mean, obviously, the Poole guy with Golden State, I mean, obviously, he's kind of come out of nowhere. But, you know, you guys could clip a video and show to your guys, hey, man, this guy didn't even – he wasn't a key player early in his career. Now, all of a sudden, he's here. You know, and maybe even do the sound bites with his interviews about, hey, listening to leaders on the team. And, like, those type of things could really, really benefit your players. So every single NBA game has tons of learnable things that are transferable to your team as well.
Yeah, very, very good. And it's modern. You know, it's one of those things that it's relevant today. And so it has a little bit more juice behind it. In many ways, it makes it a little bit more relatable.
And plus your players. I mean, they all want to be in the NBA. It doesn't matter how bad they are. They all think that would be in the NBA. And I talked to a recruit today, was telling me about the NBA. I'm like, hey, buddy, listen. Like, listen, slow down. Like, let's, you know, I don't want to ruin your dream, but like, let's get to junior college and be a good player, junior college first.
Yeah. So let's knock that out of the way first and get you right. One day at a time, though, but you got to dream big. You got to dream big. You never know.
You do.
We're laughing because you've had some. I mean, you've had NBA guys. You're JUCO level.
I'm happy to get the kid Xavier Moon that played for us my first 2 years at Northwest Florida, 2013 to 15. You know, he didn't barely play his freshman. Then as a sophomore, he was sixth man on a national championship team. You know, goes to Moore. Didn't have a lot of opportunities coming out, but I knew he was a good player. Tons of guys turned him down. Now he's on a two-way deal with the Clippers this year. I mean, like, if you do dream big and you believe and you've got good people around you and you work at it, you know, you're gonna reach something. It may not be the NBA, but you're gonna reach something.
Yeah, definitely. All right. So the last question for you. So we've had a lot of conversations in the past, you know, about, and you've even mentioned it here, of like being fortunate in our business and how lucky, and you know, it's a great, you know, it's a great profession, not always the best business, but it's a great profession. What is the best thing that can happen in your life right now?
You know, just keep helping these young guys develop, and you know, and obviously winning games obviously is good, but you know, just you want to see the next crop of guys reach their goals and dreams. You know, you want to see the next 12 guys you have on your team, you know, win a state championship, win a conference championship, win another national championship, and then go on to, you know, all the Division I schools they usually go to, because, you know, because that's what they dream about. And I think that's kind of why I did take the job, is to continually help people out reach their goals and dreams.
Awesome. Well, keep doing your thing, keep impacting, keep winning games, keep enjoying the process. Hopefully you can be there for a while. No more moves, you know, no more inflation. but all good things for you. I'm really happy for you, excited for you, and appreciate your time and being on the Rising Coaches podcast today.
Thanks so much for having me. And listen, good luck to you as well with your new opportunity.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thanks.